Welcome to Uncle Bob's Magic Cabinet, a mother-daughter podcast about all things magic and mythology and pop culture.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
And we're on.
And we're on.
Everyone, I'm Liam, the daughter.
I'm Lauren, the mom.
Wow.
Hey, we just had like a laugh attack and I'm like weeping.
And I can't tell if it's just, tissue.
I know. I can't tell if it's seasonal allergies or just the laugh attack.
Here's the thing.
It's a combo.
I was having a bad hair day. Okay. And so I went to get my trusty hat.
Yeah.
If you've been here a while, you know the hat in which
you slept
I speak
on
of.
It wet.
I slept on it funky. And it's just one of those days where I tried. You know what? I gave it the old go.
Yeah.
And so I was like, Jake, bring me my hat. I snapped. Bring me my hat. And I put it on and my hair, I got it cut so it's short and it just got swallowed up by the hat. So I look like a mushroom.
I took a pic.
I look like a mushroom top. We caught it on camera. Yeah. The cameras were rolling. Maybe I'll put it on Patreon. I don't know. Laura was laughing so hard she was fucking crying. Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
My mascara was running.
Same.
So you know what? Crisis averted. I took the hat off and you're just going to get the bad hair day. Whatever.
Hey, also, you know what? Roll with it.
I came in to record and you had a back massager.
Oh my God. My shoulder is thronging today.
Yeah, we're falling apart.
I feel like I'm falling apart. Yeah.
I think, are we just getting older? Is this what it's like? Did I finally cross over to your side?
You're on my side
of
the line.
Oh my God, I'm hurting.
Every day it's a new ache or pain.
Yeah. And I woke up at like 6:30 today. What the fuck is wrong with me?
Yeah.
Also, we're just going to talk about a mishmash of things.
Okay.
Because we're just in that kind of mood. Yeah. Again, hot mess express today. You brought in this very springy plant into the studio.
Maybe that...
It smells funny.
Does it?
It smells kind of like butt.
Maybe that explains
like a
seasonal allergies.
Ew. I know. Did you clip this from a cum tree? Tell me right now. What is this? What is this plant? I mean, it's pretty, but I brushed up against it and it like, it got everywhere.
You've got petals everywhere.
I do.
Hell if I know.
It's grown you don't know outside. What it is?
I don't. I just brought it in. Looks pretty.
What the fuck? Don't.
We'll have to wait till it blooms further.
God damn. You can't be bringing random plants.
I didn't pay any attention.
You can't be bringing random plants
I just
plants
said this looks
here.
Pretty and I'm bringing it in.
And you let me like shove my face all over it. I was like, what is this? God damn it, Laura.
There you go. Oh, that's cute.
You know what? To celebrate our hot mess expressness, we are drinking blueberry ale today.
Yeah.
It's actually really good. Honey and blueberry. And it got us talking because me and Jake were having a conversation the one day about what fruits we think we all would be.
Yeah.
And I said, you'd be a blueberry and you got mad at me.
I know. I don't understand. I'm perplexed at conversation.
Well, okay, now hold on. What do you think you would be?
I guess I never really thought about being a fruit.
Yeah, someone asked us that before.
And then I said watermelon, and you said that's just your favorite fruit. But
I didn't ask you what your favorite fruit was. I asked if you were a fruit. Like, what energy do you think you have? I think you have blueberry energy. Like, if I think about, like, going blueberry picking, that seems like lore.
Yeah.
That's like, that's you.
Well, what kind of energy does a blueberry give
off?
Kind
of like Grandma Nut. Arrived back at the Grandma Nut.
Blueberry, you know, when I think of a blueberry energy, I think Violet Beauregard and Willy Wonka.
Oh my God.
You know,
that's what you think of with blueberry energy.
Rolling me around the floor.
Oh my God, that's interesting.
Because she ate the blueberries and she, you know.
I'm aware.
Yeah. She oompa loompity dude.
TM. TM. Okay, fine.
Okay.
Fine.
All right.
I guess
so. What kind of fruit are you?
We decided I'd be a cherry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why? What kind of energy does a cherry give off?
Well, you know what I taught
you? Sour. Or will you be?
You know what? Rude.
Sweet tart.
You know what? All of the above. I taught you about cherries a few weeks ago.
That's true. You did.
I have that energy, whatever the fuck all I right. said.
Well, you better tap into the blueberry then.
Okay. Well, you know what? I said Jake would be a blackberry. Can we all agree?
I don't know.
You know what?
I'm okay. So confused. I do not understand this exercise. I don't understand it. What kind of energy does a blackberry give off?
Are you seriously telling me you don't understand like the energetics of plants?
I do.
Okay. Well, why are you overthinking it? When you look at a cherry, how do you feel? You know what? I'm done. I'm done. I can't have this conversation with you. You know what? I'm leaving it up to the masses.
I'm going to have to think about this.
I'm leaving it up to the masses.
I'm going to have to analyze it to death. And then
Laura will get back to us in about 4 months and she's going to have, you know, a really long paper and charts and graphs as to why she's not a blueberry and why she is whatever else. What the fuck? You're going to pick something weird.
I am a guava.
Guava's pretty. Okay, you know what?
A mango.
Okay, yeah. I like that. You're very tropical.
I'm going tropical. Okay. I'm switching it up.
I love it.
Would you ever catch me in the tropics? Probably not.
You know
so
what?
Therefore, let's throw that out.
Now she's going to be thinking about this forever. You know what? I'm going to ask everyone else what fruits we would be.
Okay.
I said October would be a strawberry, but because you don't understand this, I guess you.
But she smells like strawberries.
Okay. Well, see, you get what I'm doing here. And you sometimes.
Do I smell like a blueberry?
You sometimes smell like blueberries.
Wow.
Why is that bad?
It's not.
I didn't realize you fucking hated blueberries.
I love blueberries. I love to pick blueberries. I don't really think blueberries have a smell, though. I am going to have to investigate this further. I am now. Where is my lab coat?
Oh, my God. All right. You know what? Well, with that.
Yeah.
We're just going to move it
we're
along.
Rolling in.
Mrs. Blueberry. Blueberry Grandma Nut Muffin. That's your energy.
Heavy on the nut.
Laura's like, please, heavy on the nut. All right. Well, hey, go check out our Patreon.
Yes.
There's a lot of fun things happening over there.
Having a good time.
The link will be in the description.
Yes.
Please rate us on Spotify and Apple as well.
Please do.
5 stars, please.
5 stars. $3.99.
$3.99. Much appreciated.
Yes.
All right. Are you ready to get into it?
I am.
I have a really fun topic today, and this has been requested so much, and I find it interesting because it ended up not being very magical.
Really?
And so for the amount of times it was requested, I was like, oh, really?
Interesting.
I'm talking about The Burbs.
Ooh.
Ooh. From 1989.
My gosh, I don't think I've seen that since 1989.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's been so long. Oh. I'm excited.
We have it on VHS.
Yeah.
This is a fun movie.
Yeah.
And I like it for spring or summer. I don't know. It has that kind of like spring break or like summer break vibe. Uh-huh. This is a funny one. I would definitely check it out if you haven't seen it. 89, we're at a precipice. You know I love a precipice.
You do.
This is a horror comedy film.
Okay.
So right up my alley. Rated PG though. Interesting.
Wow.
So you know I'm like
Usually on the fence about that.
Yeah. There were many taglines for this movie, but my favorite one was "He's a stranger in an even stranger land ... suburbia."
Oh no.
I thought you would like that.
Suburbia.
Laura like hates suburbia, if you were ever wondering. She's ranted to me about suburbia many times before. This was written by Dana Olsen and directed by Joe Dante. Do you know who that is?
We know Joe Dante.
Gremlins.
Yes.
Yes. We love Joe Dante. Mm-hmm. And Joe Dante, I think, did The Howling as well.
Uh-huh.
But mostly known for Gremlins.
Yes.
He seems like a funny guy.
He does. I've seen interviews with him and he is quite entertaining.
He pops up on Shudder a lot.
Yeah.
Like the documentaries they have. Yeah. And he just seems like goofy.
Yes.
And Gremlins 2, get the fuck out of town.
He's having a good time.
All right. Here's your cast. This is a big one.
Yes.
Tom Hanks. The Tom Hanks.
The Tom.
Have we talked about him before?
I'm sure
we have.
I feel
like we have, but not in a... Oh, you talked about Big.
I did.
Yes. He plays Ray Peterson.
Nice.
You have Carrie Fisher.
Wow.
As Carol R.I.P. Peterson. I like Carrie Fisher. Yeah. And she looks really pretty in this movie.
She?
Yeah. We have Rick Dukumin.
Hmm.
Is that his name?
I don't know.
Was this guy popular? He's Art Weingartner.
I don't know.
He's the funny one in this movie. Okay. Holy shit.
He's not ringing a bell.
His comedic timing. He looks really familiar, okay. But I feel like I looked him up and I was like, I don't know. But he just was really fucking funny.
Okay.
Are you ready for the next one?
Yeah.
We have Corey Feldman.
Of course. As soon as you said Joe Dante, I was like, probably got the Feldman in it.
I know. Yeah. Because he was in Gremlins. Yeah. Corey Feldman is Ricky Butler.
Ricky.
And he's like a teen in this movie. So it's fun. We have Bruce Dern.
Bruce
Dern as Mark Rumsfeld.
The Faja of Laura Dern.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't think I had ever seen a movie of his before.
Oh, really?
I didn't realize this was him in here, but I don't think I know him from anything else other than being Laura Dern's papa.
Papa.
But you know what? He was pretty funny in this movie as well. The whole cast was really great. We have Wendy Schall as Bonnie Rumsfeld.
Okay.
Gail Gordon as Walter Sesnick. And we have Henry Gibson as Dr. Klopek.
Okay.
And we just talked about him.
We did.
In Luck of the Irish. He was Riley O'Reilly.
Riley O'Reilly, the potato chip manufacturer. Riley O'Reilly. Riley,
I must like his work. I'm a fan of you, Henry. All right, here's your rundown.
Okay.
This is one of those movies that I feel like describing it doesn't do it justice because it's so much based on the comedic timing.
Okay,
but we open in the suburbs, somewhere in the American Midwest. You don't really see exactly where.
Okay.
With homeowner Ray Peterson taking a nighttime stroll in his blue robe.
You know why that is? Because all of the suburbs look alike, so it really doesn't matter.
Exactly. You know what, Lore? You hit the nail
did
on
I?
The head.
Damn
you
it.
Did.
All right.
So his blue robe, if you don't know this movie, the cover is iconic. Mm-hmm. We have it on VHS.
Yeah,
and this is one
cover.
Of my favorite covers. And you'll see Tom Hanks in that blue robe. But the whole movie is very blue.
Yeah.
Like it has like a blue tint to it.
Okay.
Or one of the characters is always wearing blue. I don't know. It looks really cool.
I like that.
Yeah. Okay. So he's in his blue robe and he's celebrating his week-long staycation.
Nice.
He's really excited to be not working.
Does everybody like to take staycations?
I love a fucking staycation, even though I work from home and technically every day is
a staycation.
Technically every day can be a staycation.
Yeah.
All right. So as he's walking, he hears some strange noises and sees some weird lights coming from his new neighbor's house.
Okay.
The neighbors are the Klopeks, and they seem a bit odd, mainly because no one ever sees them in their last house supposedly burnt down.
Uh-oh.
So everyone's like, what the fuck is up with you?
Yeah.
This is extra odd in this little cul-de-sac because everyone knows
everyone
and everyone's business.
Mm-hmm.
Classic suburbia. Again,
yes.
This is why it's Lore's nightmare.
Yes.
Don't be up in my fucking business.
And a cul-de-sac.
Don't ask me questions.
Ooh, a cul-de-sac.
Do you hate a cul-de-sac?
I hate a cul-de-sac.
I always thought they kind of seemed cozy. A cozy sack. A cozy cul-de-sac.
A cozy cul-de-sac, yeah. No, I don't think I would like to live in a cul-de-sac.
Why?
There's no escape.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, you can just like literally drive in a circle and be out of there in like a second. I don't, you know, okay. All right. So besides Ray and his fam, he has a wife, Carol, and a young son, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
We have Art Weingartner, the funny guy who makes himself way too comfortable by raiding everyone's leftovers.
Oh, nice.
We have Mark Rumsfeld, a Vietnam vet who raises the flag every morning with his significantly younger wife.
Okay.
We have Ricky Butler, the bad boy teen who likes to watch the neighborhood drama unfold from the sidelines. That's the Feldman. That's the Feldman.
That's the core.
I love him. Mm-hmm. The latest word around this little sack.
Yeah.
You're going to hear me say that a lot. I can't help myself. This little sack is that the Klopeks must be up to no good.
Of course.
All right. They only come out late at night and people have seen them doing weird things like digging large holes in their backyard and beating their garbage with a stick.
I see.
You know, would that freak you out?
If I saw you beating your
garbage
with a stick?
So here's the thing. If I looked out my window and I saw someone beating their garbage with a stick, I'd say, you know what?
Ain't none
of my business.
You know what? Sometimes there's leftovers in the fridge that are there way too long. By the time you throw them in the trash, they could be alive. I don't know.
So
you might have to beat them with a stick.
You might have to take precautions.
Yeah. Does anybody like leftovers? No. I'd be happy with that neighbor that would come raid the fridge and eat the leftovers because nobody wants them.
That sounded
nobody
like
wants them.
A stand-up comedy line. Does anybody like leftovers?
No.
I love a leftover. I don't see what the problem is.
Well, then why do they sit in the fridge so long?
Mind your fucking business. I'm back to my main point.
Gotcha.
Mind your business. Okay, so the Klopex, weird. Yeah. They've been marked as weird. Mm-hmm. So after creeping on these neighbors from hell for a few days, Ray, Art, and Mark determine that the Klopex must be the leaders of a satanic cult who are performing ritualistic murders.
Satanic panic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the timeline lines up.
Must be a satanic cult. I was going to say, what led you to that? There's like absolutely no.
Because they beat their garbage and come out at night.
Exactly. So this is seemingly confirmed when they find their other neighbor Walter's dog running loose, which is like weird. His house has been slightly ransacked. Uh-oh. And his toupee has been left on the counter, and Walter would never
leave his toupee
without his toupee, and Walter's nowhere in sight. Uh-oh. Oh my God. So imagine being caught. Your without toupee the just toupee? On the counter.
Your rug.
That's my rug. Okay, Ray leaves Walter a note through his mail slot along with his toupee. He doesn't take it. He says, you can keep that. And he meets back up with Art.
Okay.
The two, who believe Walter was the Klopex latest human sacrifice, break out a book called The Theory and Practice of Demonology.
Of course.
To learn about their Satanist neighbors.
Written by the Warrens. No.
Probably. I tried to find this book. It might be an actual book. Really? I don't know. Yeah, probably written by the Warrens. But this is where the classic line comes from. Satan is good. Satan is our pal. If you know this movie, that's like the best line.
That's it.
So Carol tells Ray, who's been having nightmares about being the cult's next victim, which is like the best fucking scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom Hanks is being like sacrificed on a giant grill, like a hamburger grill. And they're like scooping him on it. I thought it was hilarious. So Carol tells him that he's being ridiculous.
Of course.
Okay, but Ray and the others only buckle down on their suspicions after Ray's dog digs up a human bone near the Klopex fence.
Dun, dun, dun.
So after an awkward meetup with the three Klopex at their spooky as hell home, so they like go into the home.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
No.
No, it's super creepy. Ray reveals to Art and Mark that while inside, he found Walter's topper. Proving that the Klopex know where he is.
Uh-oh.
Okay, because why do you have his topper?
Why do you have the rug?
So the next day, the boys stage a basement break-in while the Klopex are gone. And they find a giant furnace in the basement, which they assume is like used to burn up
bodies.
Their victims, yes. Yikes. Including Walter.
Uh-oh.
Rest in peace to the top.
They kept the topper. It survived.
It survived. Okay, super speed round wrap-up.
Mm-hmm.
Walter pulls up to his house, returning home from a hospital stay after some heart problems.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so he is alive. He just forgot his topper on the way out.
His topper. They didn't allow it in surgery. Keep your topper at home.
The Klopex were keeping track of his mail. So when Tom Hanks put it in the mail slot, they scooped it up.
I see. Okay. I see. Yes.
Topper explained.
Uh-huh.
As they're snooping, Ray and Art accidentally blow up the Klopex house.
Oh, shit.
But they make it out just in the nick of time.
Oh, damn.
And at first, we think the Klopex are like innocent and that this was all silly.
Yeah.
All just silly, okay?
Silly nonsense.
But Dr. Klopex tells Ray that him and his family killed the previous homeowners and burned their bodies in that furnace. And he does this while poisoning Ray. In the back of the ambulance. So he was bad.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the one that played in Luck of the Irish. So it was kind of fun to see him play like,
A naughty guy.
A naughty guy. Lore, get your head out of the gutter. Okay. So at the same time, Ricky finds skeletal remains in the Klopex car trunk.
Jeez.
And they are then placed under arrest. Okay, so they were bad after all.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck they were doing. It's
was
not
it a
really
satanic cult?
I have no idea.
They don't explain it.
It says they killed the homeowners so they could live in that house. And I'm like, why?
Don't
I don't know.
Make them an offer.
You know what? I think it's just silly and goofy.
Yeah.
And you're not-
yeah. Probably make them an offer they can't refuse.
So Ray and his family decide that they're going on a real vacation and instruct Ricky to look after things while they're gone. And Ricky, that the is teenager? The end. Yeah. What? The Feldman. Uh-huh. They left Feldman in charge.
Sad mistake.
I want to see that in the Burbs too. Why didn't I'd I ever get that? Oh, damn. My gosh. The end.
I see.
Do you see? It's a good one.
Yeah.
Come on.
Hey.
I feel like this is a really beloved movie, and it always gets lumped into the horror community. Like, yeah. The horror community loves this fucking movie.
Yeah.
Because it is like Gremlins-esque.
Of course. You know what I mean? I can totally see that when you were explaining it. Yeah.
And the score even, which we'll talk about it in my fun facts, but it's so like spooky, but silly. Yeah. It's a really good horror comedy. And I would say
this is probably a really good one. If you are just dibbling your toe, dibbling your toe.
Can you explain that?
Is that even a word?
Dipping and nibbling. Who's nibbling on them?
Nibbling on your toe as you dip it into the water.
That's my fear. That is my fear.
Little promise. I mean, I guess, yeah, if you're
dipping your toe. Yeah, I was gonna say this is very light on the horror.
Yeah,
it's mainly comedy, like darker comedy. Right. So if you're into that, I would definitely say check it out. Yeah. It's got a stellar fucking cast.
Dude, that's a good cast.
A great cast.
Yeah.
What is my lesson? Because it ended up not being
supernatural.
Yes.
Just super creepy.
Just super. It was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about suburban horror.
I love that.
Ooh, I just talked about folk horror.
Yeah.
So you know what? I'm just like,
you're hitting all of the genres.
I'm really expanding your horror knowledge.
There you
go. That's my duty. So first, what are the suburbs and lore? Why are they so scary to people like you? Okay. Because a lot of people do find them scary, and there is a reason why it is put into so many horror films.
Cookie cutter.
Okay, well, let's get into it.
Yeah. Well, you asked me a question I was going to explain.
Oh.
You said, why is it so scary to me? And I was like, well,
I'm sorry.
I mean, we could go on and on here.
You were so spicy today. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. I did ask you a question. That's my bad.
That is your bad. I mean, they are very cookie cuttery. I would not want to live in a home that I paid good hard money for and them telling me, you know, what kind of color I have to paint my door and how far the mailbox has to be back and how tall my grass has to be. And
yes,
no.
So that's all part. Yeah.
I do not like to conform.
And that is like the big thing with this is that it's all about conformity. So I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
I feel like you're going to feel validated.
Okay. I love this.
Okay. So I'm going to be focusing specifically on the United States because that's where we are.
Right.
And that's where the movie takes place.
Okay.
Okay. So in the United States, there is no formal definition for suburb. I found this interesting.
Okay.
So in some other places, they have like a very strict, like, this is a suburb.
Okay.
But in the US, it's slightly up for interpretation.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It can mean different things depending on who you ask.
Oh.
But generally, it seems to mean the residential area on the outskirts of a city or larger town.
Okay.
Okay. So it's seen as an in-between of the city and the country.
Right.
So there are no tall buildings like in the city. It's not as congested. It's quote unquote slower paced, but it's not typically wide open country space either. It's usually just a bunch of neighborhoods with a lot of single family homes close together and some stores, businesses, maybe
close
a mall.
Together. That's another one.
A school, perhaps.
Yes.
And scattered around town.
Yeah.
You get the vibe.
I got it.
Okay. So this next part is actually quite complex, but I'm going to just sum it up for us.
Right.
But if you want to look into it more, please do that. It is important. So with US suburbs, racism and classism come into play. Mm. Okay. Because in the 1950s, middle to upper class white Americans fled the quote unquote unsafe inner cities and moved to suburban communities for a quote unquote safer lifestyle.
Hmm.
And this is known as white flight.
Okay.
So if you want to learn about it, Google that.
Yeah.
So these communities were intentionally kept semi-rich and very white. So diversity had left the fucking chat and everything was racially, socially, ethnically homogeneous.
Oh, yikes. Okay.
Again, you're starting to get why this becomes creepy.
Right.
So we can all agree then that at least modern US suburbs were born in part out of fear.
Okay.
Fear of the other.
Mm. Mm. Interesting.
So let's make that worse and add in some control, like you were talking about, because a lot of modern suburban communities have rules and guidelines enforced by some sort of homeowners association. Mm-hmm. And we have talked about this before.
We did, yeah.
So these rules are usually referred to as CCNRs, mm-hmm. or covenants, conditions, and restrictions. Ew, that gave me the heebie-jeebies. Yeah. Restrictions?
Restrictions,
I'm sorry.
No.
This could be about anything from noise ordinances to landscape maintenance and cleanliness to the gatherings you hold in your own backyard.
All to the size of your Halloween candy bar.
Uh-huh. All in the name of maintaining appearance and property value.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Nope.
So houses are usually not allowed to be painted certain colors. Mm-hmm. You have to ask permission before you build a fence or put in a pool or change anything about your house. No. You are only allowed to hang a certain amount of holiday lights. And again, everyone will be different.
Yeah.
But some of them are very, very controlling and restrictive.
I feel like the best example of it is in Edward Scissorhands.
Yep,
like where when you look at that, looks... every single one looks the same.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think when we moved to Seattle, that's one of the first things I noticed.
Every house
was
different.
Is that all the houses were different. Mm-hmm. I mean,
not a CCNR in sight.
No, and I loved it. I loved that.
It was very fun. Yeah, if you are not into, if this is your vibe, great. Yeah. But it is not ours. So
not
this
our
like would feel very... I would feel claustrophobic or something.
Claustrophobic, smothered.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you have communities where everyone looks, thinks, and acts the exact same.
Yeah.
From the inside of their home to the outside of their home.
Nightmare.
And if they don't conform, they're fined, ostracized, or even booted out. Like, if you don't follow these rules, I think sometimes they can, like, kick you out of the fucking community. So now... that leaves us with uniformity.
Ugh.
Ah, the American dream, everyone. So this uniformity is supposedly what keeps the suburbs predictable and safe.
Mm.
Okay. If everything is cookie cutter and anything other is shut out, what could go wrong, Lore?
Right.
Thus, suburban horror is born.
Yikes.
Horror stories set in places where nothing bad ever happens.
Yeah.
Ew, doesn't it? It's
creepy.
A very creepy genre of horror, in my opinion.
Yeah, terrifying.
Yeah, so suburban horror tells you that these safe and sheltered spaces aren't so safe after all.
Right.
Your neighbor might be in a satanic cult.
Right.
Like in this movie, ghosts might be haunting your home. Serial killers could break in. Monsters might be lurking in the shadows. Or maybe the people who enforce these suburban ideals are the bad guys after all.
Uh-huh.
So there's that X-Files episode, which is why we've talked about this before, where you find out that it's like the leaders of the homeowners association that have summoned this demon and you have to go watch it.
The Tulpa, right?
The Tulpa, yes.
Yeah.
So you've got paranoia, you've got conformity, restriction, fear, etc. This all makes for a great horror movie.
Yes, it would.
So as this idea of modern suburbia kept growing, so did the rise in suburban horror movies, specifically in the 70s and 80s.
Mm.
So some just played on that fear of an like everyday American safe town becoming unsafe.
Right.
And others went a little deeper, commenting on the bigger issues with suburbia through very scary stories.
Yeah. Yikes.
Would you like to hear some other suburban horror films?
I would.
This is a good list of films. If you're trying to like stack your horror watch list, we have The Stepford Wives.
Dude, we talked about that.
From 1972.
Terrifying.
We have talked about that. Halloween from 1979 is considered
suburban horror.
Yep. Get Out from 2017, of course.
Oh my, that's a good one.
Yep, Poltergeist from 1982, because remember the housing community?
Yeah.
Yes. A Nightmare on Elm Street from 1984. Scream from 1995.
Wow.
I didn't. I
wouldn't have thought that one, but
it kept coming up and I was like, okay, I get it because of that small
insular.
The Purge from 2013, which I can't watch those movies.
No.
I cannot watch those movies. They freak me out.
Okay.
Fright Night is considered a suburban horror from 1988.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, I love that one.
Love that movie. Disturbing Behavior, which is a very underrated film.
That's a good one.
I'm going to cover it. I love that movie.
That's Shia
LaBeouf,
right?
Absolutely not. That was Disturbia.
Oh,
you know what? Shame.
Shame. What was the one you said? Disturbing Behavior.
Exactly. It has Katie Holmes in it. It's very good. Okay, it's got a little bit of The Faculty vibe. It's got a little bit of Clockwork Orange vibe, a little bit of Stepford Wives vibe. I love that movie. Okay. 1998. Very underrated. Right. I'm going to cover it soon. I can't believe you just did that.
Yikes.
You know what? I'll see you after class. Okay. The People Under the Stairs from 1991. Yikes. And again, that's kind of talking about a bigger issue. Yeah. And then Blue Velvet from 1986.
Okay.
From David Lynch.
Yes.
There you go.
If wow,
you
that's wanna, a good list of movies.
I was going to say, and kind of like, why do I feel like it's a summery...
Yeah.
I don't know. Suburbia, summer. I feel like I want to watch these movies in the summer. I feel like
because that's the only time you see people in suburbia.
Oh, interesting.
Like out and about.
Yeah, like cookouts.
Cookouts I don't know. On the grill.
Yeah.
Pool parties.
Yeah, you're right.
You know.
Yeah, spring and summer when it starts getting warm out and it's starting to get warm here in Pittsburgh.
You actually see the neighbors.
I'm like, let's watch some fucking suburban horror. Yeah. There you go. I hope you learned something.
I love that.
I found that to be a very fascinating conversation.
Yeah.
Okay, would you like some fun and random facts?
Yes.
Okay, Dana Wilson, the writer, was inspired by a family in his neighborhood that was rarely seen. By others. Ooh. Do we all have one of those?
We do.
Again, that goes into the suburban horror thing.
Yeah. I think that it is almost mandated that there is one outlier.
Well, when everything looks the same, if one thing
is different.
Again, like we said, if one thing is slightly off. So in my grandparents' neighborhood when I was a kid, and that's where I spent most of my time, there was one house.
Yeah.
On the, it was like a small little neighborhood.
Yeah.
And we called him Bachelor Brian. His house was like, I don't know, darker than everyone's house,
darker
maybe a little bit.
Locked up like
you
Fort Knox.
You never saw him.
Never.
And so the kids just made like a story about it. Like, his name's Bachelor Brian and he like kills all these people, which is like horrible.
Yeah.
But that was like the story.
Yeah.
It was like steer clear of
because
Bachelor
he didn't
Brian.
Comply.
Well, you just never saw him in his house. Maybe then that made you like look because again, everyone was always up in everyone's shit. So why don't I know you, Brian? What?
Bachelor Brian was probably working three jobs to maintain
exactly.
his abode.
Isn't that like fucked up? But I'm talking, we were like
kids.
Yeah. Oh my God. 10.
Yeah. I had one.
Did you?
Yeah. When I went to my grandparents' house, you know, my grandparents had like a yard that was very like insular and it was like full of like fruit trees. I think we've
talked about this. Yeah.
But you would go back in this little alley through the big mulberry trees,
okay,
which were like, it's important because they're like encompassing, like it makes you feel safe. Right.
Right. Sure.
So you go out this little hole in the mulberry trees to the alleyway and we would all go in groups of the kids and we would walk down this alley, which was already like alleys are a little creepy.
Alleys are creepy.
You know?
Yeah.
It's behind the scenes. And there was this one house that sat on the corner that was not maintained. It was not well kept. It was very creepy. It had that like insel brick on it, you know, that looks like, you know, like roof.
Oh yes.
Roof tiles on the, as the siding or whatever. So it was like really creepy looking to begin with. And you never saw this person. Like
there it
is. Never ever saw this person. And then you would always like hold hands and run really fast past the house.
Oh my God.
So you would be safe to make sure you were safe. I mean, once you were
past the house,
obviously you were safe. You know,
everyone has one.
But
of
I
those.
Told you one day he was out in the yard and it was like this little old man. And he was like 80 years old. He was sitting on his lawn chair. It was the first time I ever saw him.
You were probably petrified at first.
Everybody was scared to death. And he was like, come on over. And of course, we're all like, yeah, okay.
Oh my God.
Probably not the best.
Maybe shouldn't have done that yet.
But he was super nice. And he was like picking rutabagas and turnips out of his garden.
Stop it.
And he was showing us how to like tell the difference. And,
you know,
and he was like peeling
of a root veggie.
I do think of that. Like I think of, you know, the people throughout my life that grew their own food.
Oh,
and how impressive that was to me.
See?
I was very fascinated. He was very nice.
You shouldn't be scared of the weird house on the block. You know we're going to be when we get into a neighborhood. Oh my God.
Yeah.
My Jake and October's house is going to be the creepiest motherfucking looking house anywhere in sight. People are going to be scared of us and we like our privacy.
You do like your
privacy. So you will never see us.
Oh my
gosh. I wonder what stories they'll create.
Ooh,
fun. But that's very interesting. I'm glad you met your turnip man.
I know, right?
You know what? Cute.
Love
I hope
it.
He's doing well.
I
he
think
was
he's
80 back then, so rest in peace.
And I was like 10, so probably not still with us.
Not looking good.
But, you know, I'd like to know what became of that house.
We're thinking still of standing. You know what? We should go find it. Down. Is that in Braddock? Yeah. We should go find it. We should go on the hunt.
North Braddock, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Shit. Are you ready for your next fun fact? Okay, I told you about the score was really good. It's from Jerry Goldsmith, who also did Gremlins. Good one guy. And two. So there you go. He also did The Omen, Alien, Poltergeist, and probably a lot more.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Jerry. Talented guy.
Talented Jerry. Guy.
But really, this music is fun.
Yeah.
It adds to like the whimsy of this movie. Okay. Yeah. It was filmed on the Universal backlot, so most of the buildings still remain.
Ooh.
And it seemed to be a very positive experience on set for all. And I only note that because after all of these years of us doing that, I feel like I haven't read that somewhere.
You know, I think that I have read very often that Tom Hanks is a very lovely person.
He brings
to
like
work
a
with.
Good vibe. Yeah, I he have does. Heard yeah. that.
Very positive, very uplifting. Yeah.
And I think this was right around the time that he was also in Big. So this was like right when
like
he
at
was
the start of his career.
So,
you know,
I will say he was yelling a lot in this movie
and Bosom Buddies
in a hilarious way. Yeah. This movie is just Tom Hanks screaming for like
well,
2 hours.
Well, if you ever watch Bosom Buddies, sitcom, it's hilarious.
Is it?
And it was very boisterous.
Oh, really?
And so maybe that was his transition from that into film. Oh, and then it was kind of like, you know, you take some of those.
We're going to have to do him for A Witch Whisperer, aren't we?
Tom Hanks. I think so.
I feel like we have another one coming up, another movie coming up on our list with him in it. Yeah. Okay. Ricky's house was also used in The Munsters. I said it was on the back lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the Petersons' house was used in Leave It to Beaver.
Wally
Beave. So one of the street signs reads Mayfield Place, the same town the Cleavers lived.
Yeah.
Cute.
You know what? My dad always used to call one of my friends Eddie Haskell.
Why? Is that bad? Was it an insult? Was he roasting?
Yeah. Well, Eddie Haskell was always the kid that came to the house and was like, "Hi, Mrs. Cleaver, you look lovely today.
Oh, God.
Is Wallace in the Beave?" You know? And that he would be like so respectful. And then you go out and he's the one
he's
that's like,
a little shit,
toilet papering the house and getting you into trouble.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know that.
So
type.
I think everybody had one of those friends too.
I feel like, yes. Absolutely. Yikes. It makes me feel like we're living in a simulation when we talk about this stuff, doesn't it? Okay, the set was close to the Jaws ride.
Ah.
You've been Jaws'd.
Yes.
Jaws'd. At
you've
Universal.
Been
you've been Bruce'd. The ride at Universal Studios, it was close to that. So the cast could often hear help screams in the distance, like from the ride.
Funny. Okay.
And supposedly you can catch a few in the movie.
Oh, cool.
Which adds to like this plot, which is kind of funny. Ask me their names from Jaws.
Please do it. Come on.
Sassy Quint.
Sassy Quint.
I've given them all nicknames.
Okay. Sassy Quint.
Sassy Quint.
Which one was he?
The sassy one, the old guy.
The old guy. Do we know the actor's name?
The old guy.
No.
It's not Richard Dreyfuss.
No.
Richard Dreyfuss is the scientist.
Yes.
What's
his name?
What's
his name?
I was so confident going into this. Oh, fuck. What is his name? Quint Brody.
No.
Brody and what the fuck is his name? God damn it.
Not Hopper from Stranger Things.
Hooper.
You always call him Hopper, but it's Hooper.
And then Boring Brody, because I find that character just to
Sheriff.
Be a snore.
Sheriff.
Boring Sheriff
You're
Brody.
You need a bigger boat.
I'm getting there.
There you go.
Okay, we'll see you in July for the Jaws episode where maybe I will learn something.
You know what? I'm already preparing for that.
The Jaws episode.
Yes.
Laura's preparing a mukbang.
A
mukbang round two. Okay, next fun fact.
Mm-hmm.
You aren't ever given a specific town or state for these suburbs. Like I said, although the camera zooms towards Des Moines, Iowa at the beginning of the movie.
Des Moines.
However, the license plates say Illinois.
Mm.
And there are many references to Chicago.
Chicago.
You know.
The suburb of Chicago.
Our old stomping grounds.
That's right.
I've been there once. For 2 days. So that's kind of fun.
There you go.
I like that you don't know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
It adds to the kind of mystery of it.
Yeah, I find it very interesting because, you know, because we traveled across the country twice and then took different routes.
We've seen a lot of it.
We've seen a lot of the country, and it really is... It looks the same everywhere you go.
It's weird.
It is very creepy.
Yeah. Creepy. There are a few like standouts, but for the most part, it's just different terrain.
Yes.
Yeah. Ugh. See, back to that feeling. I got that icky feeling.
It gives
feeling.
Me the creeps.
Yeah. My Aquarian mind is like going down my conspiracy theory rabbit hole. Okay, so a lot of scenes and character traits in this movie were improvised by the actors, including the Satan is good, Satan is our pal. And again, you can kind of tell. This movie really just, it's like a slapstick comedy movie.
And there was creative freedom.
Yeah, you could tell a little bit. They just seem to be having fun.
Yeah.
Walter's dog, which is a toy poodle. It's the same dog that played Precious in The Silence of the Lambs.
Wow.
Oh my gosh,
famous.
That dog has been through a lot. That dog has seen some things. The Klopex dog was named Landru, most likely after the French serial killer Henry. No, I'm sorry, Henry.
Henry.
He was a serial killer, so I can fuck up his name.
Bringing out your Joe Pesci. Henry.
Henry Landru. Because I guess, were they just serial killers, the Klopex?
I don't know.
Well, that's probably where their dog's name came from. That's fucked up.
Jeez.
That's fucked up, y'all. Okay, there are little nods to Gremlins in the movie, which Dante and Feldman worked on. So go try to spot those.
Love it.
I think there's a cereal box or something.
Yeah. With a gremlin
with
on it.
With gremlins on it.
Oh, that's funny.
This is Joe Dante's second most popular film behind Gremlins, even though this got bad reviews at the time of release, despite doing good numbers. So I think the cast brought good numbers, but then people didn't like it.
Like the film.
Because if you look at the marketing for this film, you really don't know what you're getting into with
it. What it is about.
Yeah. And it's like a standalone.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very interesting film.
Well, it's interesting because, like you said, you thought it, like, and we've had it recommended so many times.
I thought it was like a horror movie.
Horror, supernatural.
Right.
Kind of not.
No, not really.
But still creepy.
Correct. That's what I mean. It's like very much a Joe Dante film. I don't know. Yeah. So there you go. That's what I have.
It. I love that. That's was really interesting. I gotta go watch that.
I love this movie. It's like just a classic.
Yeah.
That
did you watch it on VHS?
I watched it on VHS multiple times in preparation.
Yeah.
Because it's just, I feel like I caught a new joke every time. There's a lot of little jokes between Tom Hanks and who I said was the funny guy. I can't remember his name. But yeah, this is just like, if you want to laugh.
Yeah.
You don't have to think too hard about this one.
All
just
right,
stick
I'm
it in.
Check that out. I've been looking for something.
Look at the Feldman's luscious locks. They're flowing in this one.
The Corey.
He's hilarious in this movie.
He's pretty much hilarious in anything he does.
Oh my God, I know. Right? I do love the Feldman.
Yeah.
We could talk about him another time. Okay. And that's all I have.
All right. Awesome. That means that I am up.
You're up to bat.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
So my pick today was another highly requested film. It's a fan pick.
Yeah, this kind of ended up being like a fan request.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. If one more person requested the movie you're about to do, I was going to explode. I think I finally, when we sat down to pick movies for the next few weeks, I was like, if one of us has to fucking do this movie because I'm sick of hearing about it.
And I got it. It's Beautiful Creatures.
I had never seen it, heard of it, nothing.
Okay. And we're going to figure out why.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. All right. So I don't like your tone.
It's funny because there's a lot of like similarities or crossover with yours. So very interesting.
Really?
Yeah. So this is a 2013 American romantic gothic fantasy.
Okay. Well, that sounds fun.
Yeah. It sounds right up our alley. Yeah. And it was released on February 14th.
Oh, well, Lore.
Playing to the crowd.
Lore's already a little pissy because she hates that day with a fiery Bernie passion.
All right. The screenplay is by Richard LaGravanes. Hopefully I said that right.
Pretty name.
And also directed by Richard LaGravanes.
Okay.
And I was like, I know I've heard that name before. What has he done? And he's done some cool stuff. But most notably, he was the director and writer of Freedom Writers and P.S. I Love You.
We love P.S. I Love You.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Actually, you know, it's funny because I said the other day, I wonder if I could do that.
P.S. I Love You. Mm-hmm. I feel like you could.
I feel like I could.
We'll make it happen.
We'll make it happen.
Okay. So kind of familiar
with
this person's work.
There you go. It's based on a novel of the same name by Cami Garcia and Margaret Stoll.
Okay.
Right. So the budget was 50 to 60 mil. All right. And it did 60.1 at the box office. So this is Clinker City, my friends.
Welcome to Clinker City, everyone. Whoa. That is a clinker. Oh,
this is a clinker. Actually, this was considered the biggest box office bomb of 2013. God. That is the title.
Fucking shit.
Yes.
Yikes.
Yes.
That's the year me and Fact Check Jake met, I think.
Whoa. That's why. You didn't see this? You didn't go to the movies and see this?
It seemed like this would have been like a perfect sexy moment. I don't really know what you're about to tell me. But maybe our audience is saying that this needs a little bit of love.
Well, so here's what seems to have happened.
Okay.
The movie got the green light to be made in hopes of filling the void left behind after the conclusion of the Twilight series.
I knew it had the same
stink.
That
was the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It had a musk.
It did have a musk. And, you know, I think that might be a little bit of a problem.
It had a Stephanie Meyer's musk.
Yes. So Warner Brothers had purchased the rights to all four books in hopes of creating a successful franchise, much like Twilight.
You failed.
But after the total nosedive it took at the box office,
ooh,
this was quickly squashed. One and done.
I feel a little embarrassed.
One and done.
I feel a little, that sucks a little bit. I'm so sorry, everyone involved.
I know.
They're now, like, I'm going to be the next Kristen Stewart.
No. And I think that they tried to really pull a lot. I feel, we'll get into it.
Okay.
So here's your cast. Also a very stacked cast.
Really?
Except for the two, like, key players.
Leads.
Alden Ehrenreich, hopefully I said that right, is Ethan Waite. I don't know him. I've never seen him in anything.
I do not know this man.
He did a good job in this role.
Way to go.
He had some good lines. It was, he held his own. I'll say that.
Way to go, buddy.
Alice Englert as Lena Duquesne.
Lena.
Now, for me, this was not a good casting choice.
Laura Rose.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
And I think it was kind of like trying to pull from the Kristen Stewart, where she was like dark and broody. And Kristen Stewart wasn't really well known at the time that she did Twilight.
I don't think so, no.
Yeah. And so I think they were kind of trying to pull from that and make her this. And it just didn't land for me.
You can't replicate K-Stu.
And why would you want to?
I love Kristen Stewart. You know what? That is enough.
We do not share.
I'm going to unroast Kristen Stewart because stop roasting her.
Weirdly, I just saw a picture of her this morning that said that it was a picture of her in this like bodysuit. It looked like she was heading off to the circus in stiletto pumps. And it said her new like fashion designer motif is pants don't exist in her world. Okay. So she had no pants on.
She doesn't have to wear fucking pants. Hey, she's Kristen Stewart.
She can do whatever she wants.
Good.
I'm just saying,
leave Kristen Stewart alone.
I just do not share the love that you have with her. Moving forward.
Okay.
All right. So Jeremy Irons, who is huge, is Macon Ravenwood. Viola Davis, another big hitter.
Yeah.
Emma. Emmy Rossum as Ridley Duquesne.
Emmy Rossum.
Yeah. I know her from Mystic River.
Okay.
But she's been in a lot of stuff.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, she gets almost top billing in this movie and she's only in it for like 15 minutes.
I know her name.
Yeah. And you would know her to see her.
Okay.
Thomas Mann is Link. Emma Thompson as Mavis Lincoln Seraphine Duquesne. Mm-hmm. Margot Martindale, which you might not know the name, but you would know the face. She's like a
You're
character
giving me
actor.
A lot of people.
Aunt Dell. She's in Practical Magic.
Okay.
You would know her. And Eileen Atkins as Grandma.
Grandma. Just simply Grandma.
Grandma.
After everything you just said.
Not Grandma. Nut. No.
A Grandma.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's your plot.
Give it to
me. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Are you strapped in?
Yes.
All right. High school student Ethan Waite has been stuck his entire life in this middle of nowhere town. Kind of sounds like yours, right?
Oh, shit.
Gatlin, South Carolina, which is fictional.
Okay.
By the time they get a movie at the theater, it's already on DVD.
Oh, shit.
They are too far from Charleston to even have a Starbucks. And he says, how sick is that? What does that mean? Like in slang, house like sick means so cool, right?
Now it does, but it used to mean like sick, like ew, gross. Like how depraved is that?
So back when this came out, it was like, what
maybe,
the crap?
Yeah. What the crap?
I was like, wow, okay.
Now if you say sick, I think it means like, oh, sick.
Sick, cool.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
It's ruthless.
Spread the word. This is the first time in my life where I've felt out of touch. I don't know.
Totally Rufus.
I turned 31 and I'm like, don't ask me. I don't know anymore. I used to be young.
Wow, you're in a weird space.
I'm in a very transitional space, okay?
Oh my gosh. All right. The town has 12 churches and one library with more banned books than books to read.
Ew. Can you dance there?
Ooh, I don't think so. McCormick is not in this town. All right. The same families have lived there for generations. The highlight for this town is their plentiful reenactments of the Civil War.
Oh, God.
Whoa, you get the picture. This is a small town.
Snorefest.
Yes, all he wants to do is to go to college and get the hell out of Dodge.
Oh, okay.
All right, but every night, Ethan is jolted awake by the same dream of a girl whose face he cannot see, who he has never met, but at the same time, he is sure that he has known her all of his life.
Okay, love. Is it love?
He wants badly. He wants her bad. He wants her badly. Each dream ends with Ethan's death.
Oh, shit.
Now, that's a downer.
No, that sucks.
That's a bummer. He's like getting all hot and heavy, and then he's like, and then I die.
You had me going up, and then I
went. Only to bring you back down.
Only to bring me back down.
His mom, of course, is dead.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Dad never leaves his room because he's in grief, and the only adult supervision he has is his mom's best friend, Emma, who checks in on him and feeds him.
Okay, well, this is taking a devastating turn,
isn't it? My goodness.
I asked you to warn me about shit like this. Oh my God. You're like, anyway, so the mom is
Mom's dead. At first, he thinks he's crazy, wanting a girl that he has never met, filling a sketchbook full of pictures of this girl he sees only in his dreams. That is until the niece of town recluse, Macon Ravenwood, blows into town and shows up at school.
Does it look like her?
Emily Duquesne.
That's her name.
Yes.
Emily Duquesne.
She immediately sticks out like a sore thumb.
Why?
She's the outsider. Oh. She's the devil worshiper, and no one wants her around.
She wear black.
You know.
She's simply just wearing all black.
Very gothy. Yeah. Now, this whole film is shot in like a Southern Gothic style, which is beautiful.
I'm okay,
like
pretty.
It is beautiful cinematography.
Yeah.
Ethan, of course, is intrigued. Mm, you know,
hello.
Something new in this, you know, boring town, and believes that she may be the gal in his dreams. Oh. What a coinky dink, huh?
But he's never seen her face, so he doesn't know.
Right.
Okay, got
but
it.
He thinks.
Right.
There's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The back of your head looks awfully familiar.
Looks awfully familiar. It's a gut feeling.
Got it.
On the way home from school, of course, the two's paths cross, and it's immediate love connect.
Meet cute.
One problemo. There's something very different about this family. Because the next day, when the popular girls insist they cannot be in class with such wickedness,
oh my God,
they begin to pray for protection.
Oh, fuck me.
Suddenly, all of the windows in class shatter inward.
Yeah.
It's a very cool effect. I've seen it done before in other movies, but, you know.
But you impressed me this time.
That's right. Only fueling the rumors that the new girl is to blame.
Right.
Ethan, he's not deterred.
Ethan doesn't know what the fuck's going on.
The two become fast friends.
Right.
And he gifts Lena with this locket that he finds one night while jogging on the Civil War battlefield, whatever.
I got a locket, got a locket.
I got a locket in my pocket. Right. When he goes to hand her the locket, he's like, I brought you something.
Okay.
Yeah. And when they both touch the locket at the same time, it triggers them to witness this flashback of this Civil War time period.
Oh, God. Okay.
Freaked out, of course. Lena confides in Ethan that her family is a bit different and that the rumors are true.
Damn it.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but those motherfuckers were right.
They're right. They're right. Her family are casters.
What does that mean?
Yes, it is. I thought, ooh, this could be my lesson. But really, it's just a fancy name for witches. Oh. Basically, they don't like to be called witches, so they call themselves casters. And okay. What do?
They cast spells.
They cast spells.
Got it.
Right? But hold the phone. Because Lena has another bomb to drop on poor Ethan. Apparently, on her 16th birthday, which is right around the corner, mm-hmm. Lena will go through a rite of passage called the claiming.
Ew.
And her true nature will be revealed to her.
What does that mean?
Will she play for Team Light or will she play for Team Dark? Apparently, the girls in the family do not get to choose. They do not have a say in it.
Just the girls?
The men do. But not the girls.
Well, let's discuss this. Let's dissect. Right? What the fuck is that?
We're going to get to
it. A man wrote this.
It was written by a woman.
It was written by a woman. What the fuck are you guys doing?
Ethan.
You're trying to make a point. I'm sure. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry.
Ethan is basically like, you know what? That's not right. You should get to choose your own path.
Thank you, Ethan.
And again, he is not deterred. Right?
Right.
Lena's uncle is not too happy with Lena's newfound friendship and conspires with librarian by day, seer by night.
Is this Emma?
Food bringer, Emma, to keep the couple.
Is this Emma?
Apart. No.
Oh,
no,
shit. This is, okay, I'm sorry.
This is Emma.
Emma.
Which is played.
Why did I say it like that?
Which is played by Viola Davis.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I love Viola Davis.
I know. She's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is Emma. And they're conspiring to keep the couple apart. They don't want them to get together.
Okay. Got it.
But that's the least of their worries, right?
Yeah.
Because Lena's long-lost mom, Seraphine.
Seraphine?
Yes. Who, for some reason, does not have corporeal form and must enter through a human. Like, she's a spirit.
Okay.
So she has to enter through a human, which she does, choosing the pillar of the community and religious zealot, Mavis Lincoln, who is Emma.
This is Emma Thompson.
This is Emma.
Okay. Yeah.
So Seraphine and cousin Ridley, who is also on the dark side. Both of these gals are on the dark side.
Oh, I see.
They make an appearance because they are pretty sure that Lena's true nature is going to be dark.
Oh.
And then she's going to join their side.
Sure.
And she's going to help them rid the scourge of the planet.
Yeah.
Those mortals. You know, why do they want to?
Why is everyone always
Why do they want to get rid of the mortals?
No, I get it.
You know why?
Yeah. Why?
You know, because they don't want to live in the shadows anymore. They don't want to hide. Suck. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so at one point there's this dinner scene, like they have this party at the house or something, okay. And Ridley comes in and the table starts spinning and things start moving. It's a shot very cool. And that's probably the best special effect and the best scene out of the movie.
Okay.
But the plot is very choppy to me.
I was going to say,
hard to follow.
It is a little bit.
There's a lot of people coming in and out and like, what is their purpose? And
sure.
It's definitely difficult to follow.
Okay.
But, you know, moving forward, Lena and Ethan are now they're going on a date and they're going to the movie theater and they're going to meet Ethan's BFF, Link.
Hi, Link.
Hi, Link. At the theater. But as he's paying for his ticket, he is lured into the alleyway by Cousin Ridley.
Cousin Ridley?
Yeah. And those two get down and dirty, and he is now under her spell. Oh. And you know what the weird thing is then we don't see him till, like, he's gone. Nobody even says, like, where's my friend Link? Why didn't he show up?
Oh, my God.
I haven't seen him in, like, a week. You know, no, he's...
There's plot holes. There's some plot holes here. Trying to say nicely.
He shows up at the end of the movie.
Okay.
Anyway, in the theater, the couple again. So he's like, would you like a milk dud?
I love a milk dud.
And he keeps them in his pocket, which I would think that they would be melted. And she's like, why do you keep them in your pocket?
Yeah.
But as she reaches in, wink, wink, denial to grab.
Lure.
What's in his pocket with the milk duds is actually the locket.
You tricked her with a milk dud?
No, he wasn't trying to trick her. He just had the locket in his pocket.
With a milk dud. Because
I got one hand in my pocket and the other one on smoking my locket.
A cigarette.
Anyway, this is a very cool scene because the whole movie theater, as they both touch the locket again, it like transforms. You see all this mist come in and this fog, and they're getting the real picture now. They're getting to see what really is happening. This is the flashback of flashbacks.
Okay.
Full on Civil War battle.
Okay.
So here's how it goes. Lena's ancestor, Genevieve, brought a curse upon the family when her lover, Ethan Carter Waite, relative, right?
Oh, mm-hmm.
Are we seeing here?
Yes.
A mortal Confederate soldier is killed in battle. Going against the rules of her people, she revives him, only to re-kill him when her soul turns black because she laid a curse. She went against the rules.
Okay.
Are you confused? Is it not making sense?
No, it made sense.
Okay. So this lays a curse on all future generations of females.
Okay. Yep.
And they turn dark on their 16th birthday.
All of them.
If you're a female, yes.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So after what seemed like forever, the truth is revealed that the only way to break this curse is for a person Lena loves to die.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Okay. Crushed, Lena refuses to take Ethan's life and instead erases his memories so he doesn't even remember meeting her or who she is to keep him safe.
Well, how the fuck's that going to keep? You still love him.
Doesn't matter. Okay. She's sacrificing.
All right.
Sacrificing.
Okay, right.
Not so fast because Ridley has a plan. Cousin Ridley has a plan. Mm. Remember BFF Link? He's coming back in.
Okay.
As a speed round wrap up. They're having this big reenactment at the Battle of Honey Hill.
Honey Hill.
Honey Hill, which also happens to be the same day as Lena's birthday.
Oh, my God.
He's still under Ridley's spell. She gives him a bullet to take Ethan out in the fake reenactment, which he does. He kills Ethan.
Who kills Ethan?
BFF Link.
BFF Link.
BFF Link.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Ethan's dead.
He's dead.
Oh my God.
A grief-stricken Lena, she hears in the distance at her party and runs in her gothic-style dress through the Civil War battlefield, crouches down at his lifeless body, and just as about, she's gonna let her dark out, gonna let her dark loose.
Right.
Ethan's body transforms to Uncle Macon, who has shapeshifted, in turn sacrificing himself as someone Lena loves to break the curse and keep her from going dark.
I'm so confused.
Are you?
The uncle made himself look like Ethan. So
yes.
Ethan is not dead.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Are you?
Rest in peace, Uncle Macon.
Yeah. It's a very heroic
sacrifice
there.
Okay.
Lena realizes that she is one badass woman, witch, caster, whatever you want to say.
Okay, Lena.
And she will choose her fate for herself.
Yes.
Claiming both and neither the light and the dark.
Well, technically. Okay. But yes. Go, yeah. Lena, go.
Yeah. Technically what?
I was going to say someone sacrificed. It's okay.
That's correct. She's taking the credit. She's taking the credit. She banishes Seraphine from Mrs. Lincoln's body.
Goodbye.
And seals her away in a tree. And the last we hear of poor Miss Lincoln, she is spending her time at the local sanitarium.
Oh, okay.
Bummer. A few months later, Ethan, still with no memory of his love for Lena, prepares to head out on a college tour with BFF Link.
Okay, Link.
As he reaches the edge of town, his memory comes flooding back. He jumps out of the car and screams her name.
Lena! And how does he scream it?
Lena!
Like Mimi and Rent?
Yeah.
Lena!
She hears his call.
Okay.
In the distance. Cut, scene, the end. Making the way for the next movie in the series, of course, which we know never comes to
that
fruition.
That sounded like a clinker. I'm not even going to lie. That sounded like a hot pile of trash. I don't understand what the fuck happened in that movie.
I agree.
That was what y'all were requesting so many times. Yeah. I have to know why.
Yeah. Well, let's see if we can, you know, come up with some answers.
Okay.
Here are some fun facts. Mm-hmm. All right. The title comes from what Macon Ravenwood thought of the human race in the novel.
They were beautiful creatures.
Beautiful creatures. Oh. And he dresses throughout the film and the book, I guess, as a Southern gentleman.
Okay.
In the books, he is an incubus / vampire. But in the movie, he is a caster.
Okay.
And he's compared to the character of Boo Radley in To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay. I mean, that seems like a wild comparison.
Right?
Okay.
Right? Yes.
Yeah,
I
go
feel
off.
Like there's just so many random.
We're
I
sure.
Don't know. Apparently, the movie heavily detours from the book.
Oh.
And many of the key characters from the book do not make it into the movie.
So maybe people like the book?
So, like, the character of Amma is a combination of two characters. Hmm. Yeah, I think this is a big part of the problem. Mm-hmm. The music for the movie was recorded by newly formed band, The New Number Two.
The New No Two.
Its musical stylings were classified as Swamptronic.
The fuck does that
Swamptronic.
Mean? Like swamp electronic?
Yeah.
Swampy.
Swamptronic. And recorded at the Abbey Road Studios.
Okay, sick.
Member of the band, Danny Harrison, son of George, used the same guitar for recording that what his dad used on While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Are you trying to tell me that George Harrison did the music on this movie? Is that what you just said to me?
His son.
Oh my Danny. God. Not George Harrison.
Not George. I think he was already
rest in peace,
passed,
buddy.
Maybe.
George Harrison's son
Danny.
Did the music on this movie.
Danny or Donnie. It's spelled D-H-A-N-N-I. How do you say that?
I would say maybe like Donnie.
Donnie. Yeah, so he used his dad's guitar.
Wow.
Yeah.
On this movie. Yeah. And it still wasn't like
it was
known?
Clinker City. Yes. The accents have been criticized heavily, especially that of Jeremy Irons and Emma Thompson, who are not Southern.
Emma.
I know.
Tisk.
Tisk, tisk. I'm shocked.
I don't know who Jeremy Irons is, but tisk on you as well.
He's in The Man in the Iron Mask. Oh man, he's a good actor. Mm. All right. At one point.
Apparently not.
Just kidding. Wow, shame on you. At one point, the 1963 version of Haunting is seen on the television. I picked that out right away. I was like, ooh, that's a haunting. Yeah,
you love that one.
I do. A lot of literary and pop culture call-outs are in this film. Again, not used. Like, here's the Boo Radley to Kill a Mockingbird. They talk about Charles Bukowski. That's a big point. They share over a book. They talk about Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five. There is a very long diatribe about Kate leaving Leo, no room on the door in the Titanic.
I get it.
Hey, I'm there with you too. I agree. There was room for Leo on that door. He did not have to die. Yeah. Anyway, just a lot of like grabbing at straws for me. You know what I mean? Let's throw everything at the wall
the kitchen
and
sink.
See what sticks.
Okay.
So although all of them are casters at heart, and this is another thing that when I read this in the fun facts, I was like, oh, I guess I didn't get that in the movie because it wasn't really highlighted or explained very well because they're all casters, but each of them have their own power, individual.
Okay.
So Lena is a natural. She controls controls the elements.
Ooh, fun. Okay.
Ridley is a siren, which is why she had Link under her spell.
Sure.
Seraphine is a cataclyst, which is a natural who is dark.
Oh.
Aunt Del is a palimpsest. Palimpsest.
I've never. Let's give it a fourth.
Palimpsest. I don't even know. Anyway, I've never heard of that word, but it's someone who reads time.
Ooh.
So I'm going to have to like look into that and see if that's a real thing.
Okay, fun.
And Grandma's an empath. Macon is a natural and a cataclyst and a telepath.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that.
I thought that was interesting. And I thought that they could have played up on that a little bit more.
Yeah,
and maybe
develop
the characters a little bit more.
Yeah.
But again, I think just, you know, going from what I'm reading, you know, they did not do justice to the book. And the book was awesome. Yeah, that is the most common complaint of the movie, that it just did not do justice to the novel.
Book. Oh, bummer.
Which was really good.
So now I'm wondering if people were requesting the book.
Maybe.
Interesting.
Maybe. This is one of those movies that seemed like it just was trying to like mesh a bunch of other successful things together. Obviously, Twilight being the number one.
Mm-hmm.
True Blood. I was getting some True Blood vibes.
Okay.
Sabrina the Teenage, or Sabrina.
The newer one.
Yeah, but that came out after this. But Sabrina the Teenage Witch, I still think.
Kind of played in. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the Chilling Tales of Sabrina. Also seeing some crossover there. It was giving me some supernatural One Tree Hill vibes. I'm not even going to lie.
Okay. Well, I do like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, just didn't hit.
Did not hit.
What a bummer.
Yeah. So.
Okay. So if you had to rate it out of 10, does this...
I would say, oh my gosh.
Is this a cinematic piece of crap?
It is a cinematic piece.
Are you pulling out the badge?
I might be pulling out the badge.
Oh my God. You haven't pulled out the badge in a while.
I would maybe give this a 5.
Oh, yeah.
And I would give it a 5 simply for the cinematography. And there was some cool effects. I think the acting wasn't bad, but the script or the screenplay was just everywhere. And it was really hard to follow. It was really hard to keep my attention.
Yeah.
Because they weren't delving deep into the stories. It was just like, oh, this is here. And then this is here. And let's talk about this. And nothing was connecting
right
to me.
There was no flow.
There was no flow. Got yeah. It. Yeah. I think that.
All right. You
yeah.
heard it here.
You
folks.
Heard it here first. Not my favorite. Would not watch that again.
Wow. She pulled out the badge. I can't
believe
it.
The badge. As a matter of fact, we talk about how we go about our research and I watch it first as a observer.
Sure.
And then I go in and critique it and,
take
you know,
notes.
Take my notes and I could barely get through the first, let alone the second watch of it. So, yikes. I was like, when is this movie going to be over? So I really apologize for everybody that recommended it and loved it. And I'm hoping that it was the book that you were recommending because...
Arose.
Obviously, the other three movies did not get made.
All right. Well, what is your lesson?
What is
though?
My lesson? Again,
it was magical.
Like, ooh, what is it? That's again, it's another one of those where there's so many different types of magic, but
no.
You know,
sure.
Obviously, my first thing was, oh, casters, what's that? And then diving into it, and it was nothing.
Just people that cast spells.
Just people that cast spells, yeah. So I am going to talk about the main thing in this movie, which was this locket.
Ooh.
This locket that was found.
The magical locket.
Yeah, and I thought, well, we haven't talked about lockets.
We have not.
Yeah, so no one is quite so sure when lockets first appeared on the scene, but they are highly believed to be a spinoff of the magical amulet.
Ooh, really?
Ooh, yes. Oh. A locket is considered a small vessel which originally would contain herbs, perfumes, tokens, prayers, religious relics, and magical items.
No shit.
Yes.
Okay, put some herbs in a locket.
Yeah,
I like
yeah.
that.
So during the Black Plague, a locket in the form of a pomander contained ambergris
okay.
and other medicinal herbs believed to stave off the plague.
Okay.
Yeah, so yes. doctors would advise folks to carry around good-smelling things to lessen their likelihood of contracting the dreaded plague and also to detract from the awful odor that came
smelly
with it.
Okay, yeah.
The easiest way to keep something important on you at all times was to wear it in the form of jewelry.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah. So European designs can be traced back to the 16th century where they were worn for protection and to keep evil spirits at bay.
Yeah.
One of the earliest examples known is actually not even a pendant, but it's a ring.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it belonged to Queen Elizabeth I,
okay.
dating back to 1575, opening to reveal a portrait of herself on one side and a portrait of her mother, Anne Boleyn, on the other.
Oh.
And historians claim that she never removed the ring.
So what is the definition of a locket then, if it could be a ring? So it just has to be like double-sided?
I think it opens and can house... things.
Yeah.
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 I mean, you
things.
Can see pictures of the ring and it looks like more of a cameo. Interesting. I wouldn't have considered that a locket. So it's
right.
interesting to me that they call it a locket.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I would not have considered that.
Okay. Fun.
Some of the earliest lockets would contain a sentimental lock of hair mm-hmm. from a loved one and
sure.
they could get quite fancy. So they could be braided, you know, made into intricate designs
Don't
and
be,
set in the locket.
Do not be crafting art.
I know. Some of the lockets
don't be
would
doing
have
that with
like,
my hair.
You know, how most lockets you see are like gold
yeah.
and they open, but
sure.
these ones would be like glass and they would open, but then you could see the intricate design
you
of hair.
You could see my braided nubbin hair.
You could see the braid.
I love that.
Yes.
yes.
So before the invention of photography,
uh-huh.
this may be all you had to remind you of a loved one.
Okay. Well, that's devastating
yeah,
when
like
you put
whether,
it like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like whether they passed away, whether they went off to war. And unfortunately, during this time, parents would often have to leave their children at orphanages when they no longer had the means to care for them.
Don't say
that
stuff like that to me.
It's devastating.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So in the 1700s, it was customary to require parents dropping off their children to affix something to each child to help identify them should you ever be able to return for them.
Okay. Well, I'm devastated.
And so often they were given a locket with a family heirloom or something.
Oh, my God.
And so for this reason, lockets have come to signify hope, remembrance, and one's heritage.
Ew, why am I getting uncomfortable? I feel really a lump in my throat. Right? That's really sad.
As a matter of fact, they say if you're a fan of Annie, mm-hmm. you know, the movie or the play or whatever, this is shown in that movie. And it's very, and it's very true, you know. It's very true of that time period. But with the invention of photography, the old locket got a new spin. Okay. Began to contain photos of loved ones.
Oh.
Gaining popularity in the U.S. during the Civil War, which is when this movie takes, you know, they go back to the Civil War. When soldiers gifted a locket containing their portrait to the gals as a memento in the likelihood that they did not make it back from the battlefield.
Okay, again, devastating. Again,
whoa.
Way to bring the room down.
Jeez. Continuing to maintain popularity through the First and Second World War.
Okay.
In magical circles, the locket can be fancy and a convenient substitute for a charm bag, which can sometimes be cumbersome to just carry around.
When you said to put herbs in it, mm-hmm. I was like, my mind started spinning. I was like, oh, damn. Yeah, mm-hmm. you could really just make it like a little spell locket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So instead of carrying like a cumbersome, I'm going through the airport with my charm bag.
Become cumbersome to this world. You said it twice. I let the first one go.
Oh my gosh.
You said it again. Okay, sorry.
So your locket can be used for protection, for keeping nasty things away, creating a protective barrier around you.
Mm.
But most often the locket is used in love spells.
Ouch.
To encourage a fruitful union, prosperity in the relationship, faithfulness, and to keep a loved one close.
Aww. All right.
Many love spells contain a photo of your loved one on one side and a lock of their hair on the other.
You know what?
Locks of hair.
I just don't need some of Jake's Hartnett hair in
I
there.
Always go
He's
back.
He's giving me Hartnett again.
I always go back to the Sopranos.
With the hair, the nails.
Yeah. Yeah. None of that. Yeah. Left
Did
around.
You hear what I said?
You don't want the Hartnett hair.
He's giving me Hartnett.
He's the Hartnett. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's letting it grow out.
I told him he has a few months to grow it out like Nick Cage.
Well, you know, we already told him. It's Con Air.
We're doing
this
Con Air this year.
Nicolas Cage, November.
But right now, he's giving me H2O.
Yeah, he's giving you H2O, but he's going to let those locks grow out. We need some time. We need some Con Air hair, Jake.
I told him to put some gel in it. He said he didn't want to be like, there's something about Mary.
Hilarious.
Okay, oh my bad. I digress.
All right. So lockets can also be used in binding spells for relationships that have gone awry.
Oh.
Yeah. So you can bind somebody to not bother you.
Oh, right.
So make no mistake. Although the locket is often associated with matters of the heart, mm-hmm. they are also used to cast some gnarly curses.
Really?
Yes. Especially when someone has seriously harshed your vibe.
Oh.
So we are talking about the worst dregs of humanity. Like somebody that has really like...
Done something bad. Okay.
And I did come across several spells, but I'm going to leave you to research that on your own.
We're not going to be responsible for that.
Yeah, we're not passing that out. But I do offer up a protection spell locket I found, and I thought it was really cute. You will need a locket, of course. And, you know, you can find them...
Antique thrifting stores,
flea markets, or maybe you have one in your family. You want to cleanse it, of course.
Sure.
Grab some black obsidian chips, some rosemary, sage, or mugwort, or a little smidge of all three, mm-hmm. Black candle wax, incense, mm-hmm. and salt.
Ooh. Mm.
All right, so burn your incense.
Okay.
Light your candle.
Mm-hmm.
Cast a white circle around yourself and the locket.
Mm-hmm.
Clear your mind, set your intention. Place your items inside the locket. Make sure you can close it, of course. Probably have to, you know.
You know what? Arrange. Don't get too crazy.
Don't get too crazy. You want to make sure it closes. Right. Once you have everything situated the way you want it, drip the black candle wax into the locket, ooh. Cementing your items in place.
I like that.
Close and wear in good health.
Ooh.
As you actively wear your new magical locket, be sure to recharge it occasionally under the full moon to refuel it.
Got it.
But you can also get creative. Like you can use you could do kind of the same type of thing with herbs for love, prosperity.
Sure. That's a very
increasing psychic awareness or magical abilities.
And the color of the wax. Remember
the color
to bring
of the
in
wax.
Color magic.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Ooh, I feel like I kind of want to keep my eye out for a locket.
Yeah. I had this thing. I went through this little phase a few years back where I wanted to collect lockets. One, I think they're beautiful.
They are very pretty.
And, you know, I'm a big fan of keys. Keys and lockets mm-hmm. make sense to me. But I thought, you know, you could do like a hard, like, perfume.
Yeah.
Like a solid perfume and pour it into a locket.
Ooh. Oh, just have like when, you know what, you're smelling a little bit.
Yeah. But it could be like a perfume infused with things for love sure. or luck or
magical perfumes, yeah. you know,
like
what,
make
Laura?
An infusion, mix it in wax and pour it. I would like that.
I would like that a lot. Mm-hmm.
That sounds nice. That yeah. sounds like a fun little craft night.
Yeah, I know. Right.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So
we
I thought that was
like
cute.
Witchy craft nights.
Yeah. Fun.
We are getting older, yeah, aren't we?
We are. Witchy craft nights.
Oh my God. What's happening to me? If I say I want to start a book club, just look out. Okay. Something's wrong.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I like that though.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was cute.
That seems like a pretty easily accessible tool that you could just, I don't know, so. Maybe stumble upon and then you yeah. can use it for little spells. Yeah. I like that a yeah. lot.
And I think if you're one to thrift and flea market like we are, I think, yeah. you know, you're just drawn or to certain things.
Yeah, you're a big jewelry person. Yes. Yeah. That's a cool way to bring that in there. I yeah. like that lesson yeah. more. Thank yeah. you.
You bet. You wow. bet. So the movie was a clinker. You know I did what? Not care for
My
it.
My apologies.
That's all right. Hey, I am down to, I like to watch new things, but...
Yeah.
This one I do not need to watch again.
You said one and done, my friend.
One and done.
One and done. Well, you yeah. know what? Go watch The Verbs.
Go
I would say at least you got one out of two.
One thumb out of two.
Hey, you know what?
Woo-hoo!
If this plant of yours attacks me over here one more time, you better get this out of the studio. Next week, I don't want to see pretty. This thing. And I mean, it's gorgeous. But again, A, you don't know what it is. So I'm going to have some kind of poisonous rash all over my face later. And number two, it smells like butt.
I'm going to look. And I'm going to have to do some research.
I don't know if I did A, B, or one and two. It's attacking me.
You know, whatever.
Right, up top. That was Woo! A great episode. Woo! I feel right. like I learned a lot. That was fun.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. We will catch you
yeah.
next week.
Oh, yeah. We All love right. you.
We love you. TTFN.
Cut, print, check the gate. Moving on.